Afternoon, everyone, and welcome. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting at republicbroadcasting.org. Today is Tuesday, September 6th, 2022. I'm your host, Richard Carey, and this is Beyond the Official Narrative. And I do have with me my regular Tuesday co-host, Paul in California. Hey, welcome, Paul.
Good morning, Richard. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm good, Paul. And always good to have you here. I understand today you have arranged a special guest. So I thought maybe it would be best suited for you to give us a brief intro, a bio description, and introduce your guest, please.
Absolutely. I think today is going to be a breath of new air in many topics, but specifically the whole virus, no virus debate. I've known Sophia Smallstorm for probably a little bit more than 10 years now. Time flies. I first met her at a conference in 2011. And what was most impressive to me, other than the subject material, was the way that she thought and the way that she presented her information. And I have since come to believe that she is one of the preeminent minds on the internet, and that's my opinion. And as all the listeners know, my opinion counts. She has a newsletter, she has a newsletter with subscribers, which is very much worth it. In fact, it's the kind of reading and thinking and insights that, in my opinion, are just not obtainable anywhere else. She has at least a couple of websites, one I visit regularly, and I've recommended over the years probably at least 50 to 70 people or more go to her blog spot on aboutthesky.com and access her all the videos and other things that she posts there. And I think everybody's going to be happy today, and I am very pleased to welcome Sophia Smallstorm.
Well, welcome, Sophia. Thank you for coming on.
Yes, you're welcome. I hope everyone can hear me all right.
Yes, loud and clear. Yeah, crystal clear.
Yeah.
Good.
You sound good.
And Paul, I don't know, where would you like to begin as far as the topics for Sophia?
Well,
Sophia, did you say she had something in mind? Go ahead, sir.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, I'll just briefly begin. I'll just re-encapsulate what you, Richard, and a lot of listeners have heard me say before, that despite all the so-called controversy about viruses don't exist, viruses do exist, viruses aren't what we think they are, so on and so forth, I've always felt that most of the debate that I've encountered is fairly simplistic, and I always thought that these so-called viruses don't exist is in many ways sort of a diversion, and it's not really pertinent to discuss. I've always tried to concentrate on the idea of what is it that they say viruses are, and what is it that they say they do, and is that able to be substantiated or proven? I believe
are you asking?
February. Go ahead.
I mean, was that a question posed to me, Paul?
No. It's a brief encapsulation of what I was thinking, and the question is coming up really quick. So, Sophia. So, what I was going to say is, I first heard Sophia on a podcast, I believe, in February or March of 2020, where I heard her say that viruses are not, quote, living in the traditional sense. And when I heard that, it was the first time I'd heard such a thing. Before that, I just had a notion of what viruses are, just like a lot of people have a notion of many things, but they don't really understand. And that sent me on a little bit of a journey. So with that said, Sophia, if you'd like to tell me what you think of what I've said so far and some of your own thoughts about this so-called virus debate.
Well, Paul and Richard and the listeners, you know, I got a lot of my information from a good friend of mine, Jenny Lake, who is totally brilliant, and she has an unrecognized blog herself called Jennifer Lake, L-A-K-E, .wordpress.com. And on this blog, she keeps kind of a running notebook of the stuff that she dives into. And it's very difficult to understand. I mean, I have to call her multiple times to tell her to explain this, that, and the other to me. And then I have to go off on my own diving expeditions to try to understand what she's notated on that blog. And I don't expect the ordinary person to understand it. So periodically, I'll take her information and then my own wanderings and put them together in a newsletter. So my newsletter, Paul referred to it, it's not news. I don't cut and paste articles. I actually render the conclusions of my own thinking into, it's like a personal essay, and you get it by snail mail. And you can see on sophiasmallstorm.com how to obtain it. It's not something you sign up for online. So this whole virus thing, we have to throw out the idea of what I call the mythic virus. That's the mythic virus. There are many contexts for virus. So mythic virus is some little organism, some tiny thing that is infectious, it causes disease, yet it is inorganic, strangely. It can mutate, and it has necessitated the creation of vaccines. That's the mythic virus. Let's throw that in the trash, okay? So what does biotech, biology, medical research, what are they talking about when they issue scads and scads of studies in which they refer to virus, 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 virus? We have this virus. We found this to pertain to this virus. We got this virus from such and such. They talk about virus day and night. What are they talking about? Everybody thinks they're talking about the mythic virus that doesn't exist. That's the mistake we're all making. All right? I'm not explaining that at this moment right now. Just keep it in mind. What is biotech talking about when they talk about virus? So now we'll go to another nebulous concept, the lab-created virus, the bioweapon, right? So in the conspiracy or truth movement, people think that there are these evil scientists who want to start a wave of illness, an epidemic, and they create some kind of bioweapon, and then they discharge it in a population group, and that causes a wave of illness. All right, I'm putting that aside. I'm not even going to go there. They may do stuff like this, but AIDS, for instance, which is supposed to have been originated at Fort Detrick by some of these madmen, that's not, HIV is not a virus and it doesn't cause AIDS. So that's a big mistake right there in comprehension and the average truth seeker's understanding of where HIV and AIDS come from. And we can go into that in another show. But there is what I call the actual laboratory virus. And that's what the biotech people are talking and writing about. That's what they get all these grants for. And that's what they have all these, you know, postdocs doing all this research in. What is that? What are they fiddling around with in their labs wearing their white coats? So this is what I call a worked, reduced, or rendered material. And I will explain it later in this show. They actually filtrate and render crystalline materials out of basically anything organic. You can dissolve and purify, the word purify put in quotes, you can extract proteinaceous crystals from anything organic, anything. It can be skin, it can be blood, it can be plants, it can be whatever. But proteins are the construction materials of biology. So, and crystals are the, you know, like inorganic form of a long-lasting, the most broken down part of a protein. You'll get a crystal. So that's what the actual laboratory virus is. That's my loose definition, and that's what they're working with. Okay? So how did they get there? Do either of you want to throw in comments or questions?
Not at the moment, but please continue.
All right. Yes, so please. let's look at information storage. The first computer was this gigantic thing. It was the size of an upright piano, and it was developed in the 50s. And It's all in the newsletter that I sent Paul, my February-March 2021 newsletter. You know, men were struggling to carry this damn thing, and yet it was able to hold such a tiny, tiny, tiny amount of information compared to what we can put on any kind of chips today, right? So what they found out is that nature's oldest, largest, most amazing storage device is DNA. DNA can hold, for instance, millions of megabytes of information if you just take a single gram of DNA. And there's no electricity involved, there's nothing. And it lasts forever, it doesn't go bad on you, right? So where computer code is binary, zeros and ones, DNA has four components that make it up, and they're called nucleotides. And they are letters that stand for adenine, guanine, cytosine, and thymine, A, C, G, and T. So you can actually put tons of information, if you can code it in those nucleotides, onto DNA. And they know how to make synthetic DNA. Okay? They've gotten that far. From their giant hard drive, I now found the part in my newsletter, it was actually the size of two upright pianos, and all it held was the equivalent of one MP3 song, and it took like four men to carry this thing. It weighed over a ton. But nature all along has had this minuscule thing called DNA, which is a biocomputer, and it has computed using nucleotide base pairs for thousands and thousands of years. And it doesn't go bad. And you can not only read it, but you can write on it. So reading DNA is called sequencing. Writing on it is called synthesis. And now we have the ability to read, write, and copy DNA. And we do it in the lab all the time. All right? Any questions?
Absolutely fascinating. So here would be a question that popped in my head, because I've heard this before actually from you and also a couple other places, but I think the way that you're approaching it is fairly unique. The coding or the information you're referring to, is this strictly limited to what they call protein synthesis, or are there other possibilities?
Protein synthesis is simply making proteins. Synthesis means mm-hmm. making, all right? Generating. In DNA, synthesis means writing. So they can read the DNA of something, they can write on it, they can program it. That's what's so important here. And when you talk about the conventional computation with hard drives, you have two different parts of the hard drive system. You have storage areas and processors, right? And when you buy a computer, they'll tell you how much storage it has, like 1 terabyte or whatever, and what kind of processor it has. And there is this lag time, latency, between transferring the data from the storage area into the active area where you want to actually manipulate it, and then it has to be stored again. So there's no latency in DNA. This is called in-storage computing. So nature already does this. It doesn't have the storage problem. So it's parallel computation. And the amount you can get onto synthesized DNA, the amount of megabytes, is just phenomenal. But it was always very, very expensive. So they have now managed to do this much more capably, I'll just say. And they have also figured out, of course, how to write on these things they call viruses. They have been able to program crystals. So we'll go back to the lab where they have taken plant material, and they like to do plant material rendering into this proteinaceous crystal form, because plants are not expensive. And we are used to eating plants. So if you want to program a plant crystal and we introduce it into a human being, we've been feeding on plants for eons. So we're going to do very well with that, right? So biology today is nanotechnology. So everything that we do has been reduced to machine mechanical manipulation. They simply in labs consider everything in the human being to be a subpart of a machine. And that's kind of the new biological position. So when they take, for instance, plant material, the earliest virus ever identified was tobacco mosaic virus. And this is not a disease-causing thing. They thought because certain plants related to tobacco, nightshades and tomatoes and this and that, they get these brown spots on their leaves. And this, they thought, was caused by some agent. So it was Dmitry Ivanovsky back in the 1800s. He was a botanist or something. And he found that he could actually transfer the gunk from these brown spots onto healthy plants, and they would also develop the brown spots. So this was the disease-causing agent. He decided it was a virus. But the plants never died, okay? So what they did in the lab to isolate this tobacco mosaic virus, they simply used filtration. And this is what Andy Kaufman and Cowan and all those people get into. The laboratory has these repeated reduction processes. They involve distillation, purification, filtration. They're basically rendering, rendering, reducing, reducing, down to the elemental structure of anything biological, which is proteins that are crystalline in nature, right? So it's these renderings that the laboratory scientists call viruses. And why they do that, okay, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and just a point of clarification, I believe I am following you, and I hope most other people are. So essentially what you're saying up to this point is that these labs are not working with any what they want us to believe are naturally occurring, naturally mutating viruses that spread and infect us. These labs are working with their own creations from this rendering process you're referring to that takes everything down to a crystalline level. Is that correct?
Yes. This crystal stuff, because it's a crystal, it's conductive. It's electromagnetic. It responds to piezoelectric effect, which is you put a voltage on it and it shudders and makes a frequency. You put a frequency on it and it shudders and makes a voltage, right? So these crystals are very malleable, and they have learned how to program these crystals. Don't ask me how, okay? Because I don't know how. But what I'm going to go to this quote. These people were so happy. I'm going to read you this. They call viruses something they get from a mess, all right? So they took this tobacco mosaic virus, which Ivanovsky gave them in the late 1800s. And in 1955, two scientists from University of California's Virus Laboratory were working with viroids from tobacco mosaic virus. These are genetic fragments. So I'm going to read here from Jenny Lake's blog. The men dissolved TMV, tobacco mosaic virus viroid, in a chemical solution, purified and then reconstituted it in solution, obtaining a ratio of infective particles. Infective just meant it transferred easily into other things. Their experiment, set to prove the existence of DNA/RNA, caused quite a stir. Now I'm quoting someone else. This,
Gunther Stent. We're going to a break, Richard. Does that occur?
I'm sorry. I,
I missed the start of the break. We'll be right back, folks.
To allow independent voters to vote in their primary, it should be the party's decision, not the state government's. There are five nationally recognized political parties, but the Democrats and Republicans have been in power for so long, they have made laws specifically designed to protect their power. These private, supposedly nonprofit organizations must be afraid of open and fair competition. Find more commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until tomorrow, Sivis Pashem Parabellum.
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure and natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com. S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen plan to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile oxysilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
Ain't no real big secret, all the same, somehow we get around it.
And we are back, folks, beyond the official narrative. Republic Broadcasting, Richard Carey here with co-host Paul in California, our Tuesday co-host, and our special guest today, Sophia Smallstorm. Sophia, please, if you'd like to continue where you left off.
Well, I was quoting something from Jenny's blog, and she's quoting other people. But anyway, there one of these guys was called Frankel Conrat. And somebody said about him, I don't even know who it was, but one of these other scientists, Frankel Conrat seems to have done the biggest thing with TMV since Wendell Stanley crystallized it. He can add soluble TMV protein to soluble TMV RNA, aggregate the whole mess into rods of which 0.1% are infective. Naturally, you don't believe it, nor did I or anyone else, but unless he has made up the whole thing, it seems that it must be true. You can't beat that for laughs, can you, buddy? So they're all laughing and joking at what they can do with this rendered stuff that they've created. They are able, actually, to write on what they call the whole mess, inscribe it with their scientific desires, and then put it in our bodies through vaccines like a genie in a bottle, right? They want to see what it will do. So this is the whole basis of mRNA vaccines. They are programs that are carried into you on these crystalline materials, and then they are released. So the virus is just filtrate, and it's turned into the building blocks of nanotechnology. In fact, this is an interesting quote. Francis Crick, remember Crick and Watson, the granddaddies of DNA? Francis Crick said, supposedly, any child can make a virus. And where do they get a lot of their viral components, their rendered filtrates? From feces. I'm not kidding.
Wow.
The early virus makers, just so let me read this from my news, the early virus makers, scientists, carried polio crystals in their pockets and purses, just like Marie Curie carried radium. These end materials were derived from rendering fecal samples into crystals. Wow. I mean, a child does this with mud pies, right? This is only a little more sophisticated.
So to just backtrack just a little bit for the listeners, because it's important, I think, for them to understand the concept. So I've often said, among many others, that at the essence we're bioelectric in nature, that many people contend that, among other things, the acupuncture meridians are essentially, power lines or conductors, that the nerves themselves transmit electricity. In fact, that supposedly the exchange between cells is an electrical potential, where the cell gives up its waste products and CO2 and receives oxygen and water and so forth. But you mentioned piezoelectricity, and you want to just give a quick thumbnail of what piezoelectricity is and how it's important in the concept of these crystals you're talking about?
Yes. The piezoelectricity was discovered actually by Pierre Curie, Marie's husband, in the late 1800s, and he abandoned his exploration of piezoelectricity to help Marie isolate radium. So the concept of a piezo crystal, it has to be a particular kind of crystal, and it's found in metals, it's found in quartz, silica, and also in our biology. This is a particular kind of lattice formation of the molecule such that it receives current and generates frequency, receives frequency and generates current. Now, I'll give you a very plebeian example, Bic lighter, okay? When you flick the Bic, the little switch thing, your thumb is putting pressure on a piezo crystal inside. And the crystal, because it's receiving pressure, all mechanical pressure, mechanical force, equates to frequency. So it's receiving frequency, and it's going, ow, and it generates a spark. And that ignites the flame,
the wick in the fluid.
Or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. So that's how it works. We use piezo crystals in transduction, in microphones, speakers. We use it in the ear, auditory transduction. Just look it up. Everything in your body uses tons and tons of the original natural wireless energy through this transmutation of physical force into voltage and voltage into physical force. So,
Sophia, so I should have given you a heads up, but so you know, we're going to come up on a break here at the half hour, and then we'll be clear the rest of the way. So I think we got maybe a minute. Is that about right, Richard?
No, actually, it's upon us now. There's when you listen to the live stream, there's like a minute delay. So yeah, no, we should be on it right now. I don't hear the music, but I believe it is. The break. Oh, there it is. So yeah, we'll be right back, folks. One more short break and a longer segment.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
We are back, folks, beyond the official narrative. Republic Broadcasting, Richard Carey here with Tuesday co-host Paul in California, and our guest today, Sophia Smallstorm. And, well, Paul, where would you like to take things next?
Well, I certainly want to continue with this discussion, but I also would love to have Sophia's agreement on my assessment before. So I'm familiar with a little bit of this information, but of course I am also now learning and taking mental notes. But I think a lot of the listeners can relate to what I've verbalized before, and that would be this. And I think, Sophia, you could probably agree with this. I first started reading about viruses in, I believe it was April of 2020 when all this started. And I realized at the time that I had never given it much thought, probably like the average American. I just typed in definition of virus, and I started reading. And when I came to the part where they said, and I kept encountering this phrase, this particular phrase, multiple times at different sites. I probably spent a total of 3 to 4 hours reading, you know, no big deal, but I went to multiple sites and read what they had to say. And pretty much in common, they said something like this: hijacks the cellular machinery to replicate itself. And when I read that, the first thing that came to my mind is, what? How do they know that? And obviously they can't see it. And I just thought that that was the point where, in my opinion, the official virus narrative started to unravel in my mind. And then I had a little interesting experiment the next 2 years as I was walking around encountering people wearing masks and the mask insanity that we had, including on the hiking trail on 85-degree days. And I would just ask people, hey, can you tell me what a virus is? Do you know what the definition of a virus? And Sophia, literally 40 to 50 people stretched out over a two-year period. Not one person had one word to say in response. Anyway, your comments.
Well, again, they have some vague notion that it causes disease, but they don't know what it is. They don't. I mean, you ask them that, what is DNA, and they wouldn't be able to tell you what that was either. So, you know, what we know from me explaining this now, because I got it from Jenny, who has read incredible numbers of articles and then scientific papers, and she uses the term virus on her blog, but you have to understand that she's using that term because they use it, and when she uses it, it is these crystal forms that they filter any kind of biological material down into, and these filtered crystal forms have nothing to do with infectious disease. So I'm going to now take you to a 2019 interview. This Andrew Hessel, it's in Probe magazine. He founded Humane Genomic. That's a company. That's a synthetic biology company. And the subject of the interview is making synthetic viruses. And he says that drug manufacturing is too expensive. You cannot expect people, even with their insurance, to pay $100,000 a month for certain drugs, which is what they cost. So he said, we sort of threw away small molecule drugs because while you can computationally predict those, we have no idea how they're going to end up in the body and what kind of reaction will ensue. We began with biologics to remove this problem. Cells and viruses are all machines. Remember when I said that they reduce everything biological down to small machines? Cells and viruses are all machines, and they're programmable. So now, he uses cancer as an example. Because each person is different, every cancer is different, so we need to build something that is personalized and scalable so that every person gets their own custom-made synthetic virus to treat their cancer. So, yeah, this is called, you'll see it on billboards. I drive down the 5 freeway. There's a huge billboard for UCSD Medical Center. Personalized medicine, it says. Now, I thought, and you would think, personalized medicine means, oh, a nice doctor sits down and he listens to you and he records everything and they figure out a treatment program for you, right? No. This personalized medicine translates to synthetic biology that is going to be put inside you to treat you before you get sick. So they will get your genetic code. They will tell you what you're susceptible to based on your genetics. And then they will make these synthetic viruses custom tailored to you to stave off this disease development. So
now,
this
This
is on a subscription basis also.
Right. So I'm assuming I'm not alone in not trusting that.
No.
It
has nothing to do with preventing disease. You know, and then you'll get some disease and they'll say, oh, well, it just didn't work. Or we didn't manage to screen you for that, right? So this is biocomputation.
Right.
And this comes from Andrew Phillips. He's the head of biocomputation at Microsoft in the research department. And he says, DNA is highly programmable. So there's a video on my blog, Biocomputing Inside the Cell. So DNA is the thing they're programming. And this guy, Andrew Phillips, says, DNA is highly programmable, just like a computer, and we can program a whole range of complex behaviors just using a DNA molecule.
So I think it would be fair to say that the people that would come at this from a religious or spiritual angle are not far off the mark when they say that they are, interfering with God's design or nature's design.
Yes, biology is tromping around inside your cells and working to reorganize what happens there. This is really a theft of your humanness.
You know, I've you've probably never heard it, Sophia, but I've said on shows like this in several places that if it was up to me, if I had dictatorial powers, and I wish for those monthly, that I would probably bulldoze most medical research labs and turn them into organic gardens, and I would probably have a prohibition on so-called medical research for at least 20 to 25 years, just to give us a break and do a reset. Do you think that that's extreme of me?
Well, it's not going to happen, Paul. I mean, it's a little vision of yours that you can entertain in your own, you know, bed at night or hot tub, but it's not going to happen. There is right. So much progress that people with advanced degrees are engaging in that they're looking for recognition from, right? And they're not going to abandon all that.
Right, right. But if we had a bulldozer, they wouldn't really have a choice.
Well, again, that's far flung. But
yeah,
when you're a student of virology, you are surrounded by mumbo-jumbo and all kinds of pretension and fiction created by decades of relentless, ongoing efforts to confuse, reinvent, redefine, obfuscate what is an evil industry of slipping code into living beings to rewrite them.
Yes.
And that's the reality of it. And that's considered progress. So now I'm going to tell you how susceptible the cells are to information. So cells, right now I'm studying gap junctions. I'm studying light. Yes, Paul, it's electricity that we depend on. But more than that, it's light. We are creatures that are light dependent. And our
right.
The light that we absorb actually goes into our organs and muscles, and it causes all kinds of biological things to take place that are necessary. So closing us up in buildings under artificial light is basically killing us. It's causing havoc with our biology, and that's why we're succumbing to degenerative disease, and we're all getting sick and toxic, because we don't have enough light. You can treat and cure a lot of medical conditions just by going out into the sun, and they tell us it causes cancer.
No. In fact, I can personally testify to this, and this will be completely anecdotal, which in many cases makes it completely valid, but I spent nearly 40 years outdoors in landscaping and gardening, and I kind of semi-retired in about 2014 or 15. I just was growing a little bit weary, getting a little bit older, but I miss it so much. And I've done a few jobs here and there, regular jobs, but I'm going to go start doing it again, even if it's just working for somebody else part-time, because being outdoors just makes you feel better. And for all the listeners, if you want to make a quick note, I bumped upon a book years ago that a roommate had called Light, Medicine of the Future. So I think it was Light with a colon, and then it said Medicine of the Future. And it was quite interesting. So I absolutely believe exactly what you're saying about light. It is indeed more than just therapy. It's an absolute necessity for our proper functioning. So, Sophia, this could absolutely go on for hours, and I think Richard and I both would love to have you back another time, but would you mind if we took a couple of callers?
Sure, go ahead.
Richard?
Okay, well, yes, first we have Bob in Utah, a patiently laid holding. Hello, Bob. Yeah, thank you for calling today. And what's on your mind, sir?
Yes, my definition of a virus is an extracellular vesicle that has been accused of a crime. And that crime would be escaping its cell and assaulting a third person. And to date, only one has been taken to court, which was Stefan Lanka in 2012, which he won. So no viruses has ever been convicted. So my question is, what is your definition of a virus?
All right. I was just about to get into this material, the exosomic and endosomic vesicles. So I'll do it right now. So our cells communicate with one another. And when you have a cell or a cell group that's doing badly, let's say you were kicked in the shin, you have a big bruise, this is an injury, it's a blunt trauma injury. So these cells are ailing. So what they do is they call out using all kinds of communication methods through gap junctions, which are these fiber optic cables. They use light. They communicate to cells nearby and they go, hey, help me, send me stuff I need. And these repair materials are then issued toward the ailing cells. So cells eat and put stuff out by what's called endocytosis and exocytosis. Exosomes carry information. These are the vesicles, the pouches or the sacs that a cell expels with health information that is lost to another cell. So there are target cells that receive these exosomes. And then the cells that receive the exosomes are getting endosomes. They're taking something in. Endo means take it in. Exo means put it out. So an exosome that Andy Kaufman was famous for bringing to our attention is a nano-sized messenger made by a cell to be sent to another cell with needed information when injury or damage occurs. All right? So I describe viruses or exosomes. This is what people have identified as viruses when they look in under the electron microscope. They see exosomes, things that cells have sent out. Sometimes they see the cells sending something out. So this is I call them Air Force fuel tankers. These vesicles, these pouches of information go to damaged cells to recharge them. This is all part of the inflammatory response.
Yeah, I understand all that. Do you believe they can escape a human and travel to another human and replicate their nucleic acid?
Exosomes are meant by your body for your body. How and if they escape? I mean, they escape all the time. They escape when you get cut and you spill your blood. So, you know, are they going to do damage to anyone else? Probably not.
Okay. Probably not is your answer. Okay. Now, let's say you have a bunch of exosomes that have been fairly purified. How would you know that they even have the same nucleic acid sequence?
All right, who's purifying? I can't answer a question like that because they don't purify exosomes. They don't purify exosomes. They purify organic material into crystalline forms, proteinaceous.
Okay, how did Stefan Lanka get the same nucleic acid sequence every time for the bacteriophage?
I don't know. I'm not Stefan Lanka and I'm not a scientist. So I can't answer that.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right, I'll let you skip on that then. What is your agenda? I'm not clear because here's my problem with people in your vein. I've yet to see anyone explain an actual mechanism where electromagnetic radiation of any particular frequency has an effect on so-called oxygen uptake, as this Martin Paul character claims. Can you tell me one experiment that shows a particular mechanism for a biological effect of low-powered electromagnetic radiation?
Okay,
can I just take this real quick, Sophia?
Yeah.
So here's the thing. There's a lot of things that we all don't understand, but I think it's fairly clear, Bob, if you look into it, the literature of the, shall we say, the cell disruption or the metabolic disruption effects of electricity and electromagnetic fields is as vast. Okay, I would suggest you start with the book, it's an easy read, called Dirty Electricity, and go from there. And Sophia has mentioned the book many times, which is excellent, called The Invisible Rainbow. So, you know, the actually what you call the detailed or minute explanation may not be fully understood, but the effects of the causation of, shall we say, what we know as illness or disease are absolutely in the literature, and in many cases they mimic the symptoms of what they call viral illness. I don't know if you agree with all of that, Sophia.
Well, I don't want to be mean here, but people are confusing, not you, Sophia, some people are confusing EMF as electromagnetic fields or electromagnetic frequencies, and those are two entirely different concepts, and I just want to point that out, make Paul aware of that, and then I'll let another caller come on. And so I'll hang up then.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate it.
Okay, well, let's go to the next caller. Stephen Douglas Whitener, one of my co-hosts, is on the line. Hello, Stephen.
And Stephen. Hello, Richard.
Stephen's also now, of course, the RBN host of the Saturday broadcast, Thought Crime Live, and that's 10 a.m. Central every Saturday. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Sophia. That was a great description that you were giving them with the exosomes and the endosomes. It's like a couple of things I wanted to ask you. One was if you were aware of a doctor called a Dr. Batar, who's somewhere in North Carolina. I remember him coming on very early on and calling things out, and I just am not sure where if you had any knowledge of him. Is he worthy to follow? I haven't gone back to look at his stuff in a while, and I just wondered if you knew that name.
You have to repeat the name, please.
It's Buttar. Buttar. He was an army doctor.
A lot of these people have plumbed the information down to a certain depth, and he does that. But here's the thing: people in medicine. He is an MD. He has grown up on this thought of viruses. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I can't remember quite what he says about coronavirus. But, you know, these guys, they have accepted, because it's been told to them ad infinitum in medical school, that viruses are disease-causing agents. They believe it.
Mm-hmm.
There are plenty of people. Stephanie Seneff talks about viruses. Sherry Tenpenny talks about viruses. But they are putting virus in a different context. They're not talking about these lab-created filtrates, which is the reality of what biotech and medical research is talking about when they talk about virus, something that has been rendered. And where it came from, we don't really know.
So it's synthetic. They've created this themselves more than
yes.
Nature. It's like, yeah, that I agree with you. It's like a Frankenstein creation. I know you're probably aware.
Because they can write on it, because they can program it, it becomes an envelope.
Yeah.
Carrying a letter, and those envelopes, I'm speaking metaphorically, are put into vaccines. Mm-hmm. And the contents in the envelope, the letter with the instructions, are delivered into yourself. This is the new biology.
Well, looks like we have another caller now.
I agree.
Stephen, you
want to go on to the next caller? Go ahead. Go on to the next one. Thank you. It's a very great show. I'm enjoying I'll talk with you. Y'all, again, Stephen, thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. And just quickly, if I want to just make something clear here. So earlier when Sophia was referring to exosomes and delivering pouches, we're just assuming that inside these pouches are the messages contained in the DNA or the RNA that you referred to earlier, and that's why they categorize viruses as pieces of RNA or DNA. Is that fairly simplistic but accurate?
Well, yeah. I mean, I use the analogy of a mailman. The mailman comes to your door. He rings the bell. He has a bag. The bag has envelopes in it. The envelopes contain letters. The letters contain instructions. Right? So these vesicles, these exosomes, are these pouches containing, or envelopes containing, instructions for cells that are ailing. This is how the body operates. And then because a lot of them are spiky, so they hit. This is what this other guy, Bob, wanted to know about. When you have something striking the outside of the cell, if it's electromagnetic in nature, if it's a frequency, it will open the voltage-gated calcium channels, the VGCCs. This is what Dr. Paul talks about, Martin Paul. So when something spiky hits a cell, the cell opens up because it knows it's supposed to receive something. So these artificial viruses that are in these vaccines with these programming instructions on them, they get into the cell. Then they unload the program.
Only have about two minutes left, ma'am. One last caller, James in Vancouver. Sir, if you could be quick with your question for Sophia.
Good morning. I remember observing hospitals that had been built, say, 100 years ago, and you always had the solarium, and now you don't. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
The solarium is where you push the patients and put them in the sun, and then they spring to life, you see. So and they don't want that anymore, I think. So just thought I'd add that. So
now they have blue light.
And James, do you somewhat agree, relatively agree with what Sophia has been discussing today? Or
well, yeah, well, okay, so there's lots of things that that I know about and I agree with, and but there's things that maybe I would suggest.
Appreciate
that,
discussing more.
Okay, well, molecules. We'll pick it up some other time. I'll let you go.
Yeah. I wish you called it earlier. Right. Really, if we have Sophia again soon, James, then yeah, we'd hear from you sooner in the day. Appreciate it.
Richard, I think there's definitely we should have like a part two sometimes. And if there's a time remaining, Sophia, would you mind giving your websites and your contact information if you like?
Thank you, Paul.
Yeah. If you want to help me out, if you like what I do, go to my store, avatarproducts.com, AVATAR. It has nothing to do with the IT avatar. I had this name for ages. Jesus was an avatar, okay? People who espouse high ideals are avatars. All right, so avatarproducts.com, there's all kinds of stuff there. A lot of it is created by friends of mine. I know the vendors, the suppliers personally. It's great things that you can buy inexpensive to help you out with your own life. And then you can get my newsletter. SophiaSmallStorm.com is my blog that Paul likes to visit. Thank you. I don't exactly write on that blog, but I post things that are very carefully curated for you.
Well, it was
very fantastic, Sophia. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to have to listen to the archive again, really, but it was a lot of great information. We'll have to have you back. Thank you so much, Sophia.
You're welcome. Thank you. What a pleasure. Thank you.
All right, folks, and
thanks
please
again,
support.
Sophia.
Yes. Thank you so much. And thank you, Paul, as always, sir. And look forward to having you back next Tuesday. Please support the station, folks. All the donation information you can find at republicbroadcasting.org to keep all this free speech possible. And we will speak again soon. Transcend the construct. Regards.
Tune in Saturday mornings, 8 to 10 Central, to the Alternative Media with your host, Farron. If you've not been listening, this is some of what you've been missing.
2,000 mules, like you like to say occasionally, Farron, in your face.
They might have a set of lactating mammaries available that could provide milk for their adopted children.
Complicit news media, all pulling off this gigantic fraud.
Rhino, neocon, cucks.
There's this wonderful thing that's called Vote With Your Feet. Move to California.
I am a conspiracy factualist, and everyone else is a reality theorist.
Hundreds, if not thousands, of ships came out of nowhere.
Give me liberty, or let's give you death.
Any excuse to go in and kill yourself for this fraud of a government. This goes back 100 years.
When they come for your gold, give them a lead, and when they come for your guns, give them the bullets first. And God help us all.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.